Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We are joined at this time by Dr. Jacob Schatzer, who teaches at Union University. He is an assistant professor of theological studies, works at the School of Theology and Missions as well. Good morning, Jacob.
Hey, good morning, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you on the program on this topic, Jacob. I mean, you have four children at home. I have five children at home. And I just wonder about what their life is going to look like 20, 30, 40 years from now. I know places like Google have opened up think tanks to think about what is the next, in their mind, evolutionary part of the human race. Are our kids going to be plugged into some sort of a computer from a consciousness standpoint and can live 400, 500, 600 years here? Jacob, what are we talking about when it comes to transhumanism?
Well, you know, I think some of those details are anyone's guess. I sure hope not in some ways. But I think when we're talking about transhumanism, we're looking at this really big conversation, like you said, about what exactly is next for those who view human progress as something that's significant and to pursue and that could potentially move beyond being human. This idea of transhumanism is a commitment to use whatever we can to move on to that next stage, to become more than human.
And what are people suggesting might be the trajectory for the human race? If you have the assumed worldview that evolution is true and what is happening within the human race, are there some people suggesting this is what's next for human beings?
Well, I think that a lot of times when we think of transhumanism or when we might catch it in our culture more broadly, it's connected to this story about technology, you know, this idea that we create these powerful technologies and that we have this ability to change ourselves. And so we see this in pop culture. You know, there are certainly various Netflix shows and things like that that promote this idea of a future where we've merged with machines, or maybe the machines have taken us over, or maybe we've been uploaded into computers. And oftentimes we just keep transhumanism at arm's length because we think it's only about those kind of big, far-off things.
So, and Jacob, you released an article here on the Gospel Coalition. People can find the work that you did, New Year, New You, The Allure of Transhumanism. And if they want to go to thegospelcoalition.org, you can find this article that really is an interesting one in chronicling what is maybe the problem and what are some of the issues related to this. So if I was to ask you the question, how is this an issue today? Why should I care about this idea of transhumanism as a believer? What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, I think that the place where it's really important for believers to think about isn't necessarily in those big picture, far off things. I think many Christians know enough or have enough of a reaction to think, you know, I don't think I want to become a robot. But the problem is, I think that transhumanism is much deeper than that. There's a logic to transhumanism. There's a story to transhumanism. And it's one that's actually very close to stories that we buy into. And so that's what I try to do in this piece with the Gospel Coalition and in a book that I've done on the same topic, is point out that there are actually these smaller decisions that we make on seemingly less significant things, but that tie into this same story and make us more likely to, in the future, want to be part of the transhumanist story.
Well, and you lay out some really helpful steps in terms of understanding the process in which people engage when they start thinking about transhumanism here. And that first step is a mouthful. You reference it as morphological freedom. I'm not even sure I can say that this morning, Jacob. But what are we talking about here in terms of sort of the right to morph ourselves how we see fit? Is this talking, and you reference the idea of is wearing sunglasses or getting some sort of surgery or something along those lines what we're talking about? Or is it something distinctly different where we try to morph ourselves to be more happy, I suppose, on some level?
Yeah. So this the first step is kind of the is moving towards these extreme versions is, a tough term, morphological freedom, but basically the freedom to change ourselves however we want to. And we're used to this in some ways. There are some ways that we need things. I'm wearing eyeglasses right now. And we're also used to, you know, selecting our clothing, what we want to wear to look a certain way. But transhumanists take that idea of the freedom to use tools like eyeglasses or to wear clothing. And they say, look, there's not really anything different between, your freedom to put a pair of glasses on and your freedom to, create a third robotic arm that's connected to your brain somehow that you can control. If you want to do that and it's not hurting anyone, you have the freedom to do it.
So do things like stem cell research and maybe growing new organs based off initial stem cells to replace, if let's say you had a dysfunctional liver or a kidney or something, I know that there's work being done in the biomedical field that would say that we can go ahead and grow ourselves some new organs and maybe put them in a bank somewhere to use as needed. Is this part of that kind of freedom you're describing, or is this more of a technological thing?
I think it's part of that, but especially what they're looking at with morphological freedom isn't just repairing deficiencies, which I think often that sort of research is aimed at is fixing something that's broken. And that's a separate argument, obviously, on whether or not growing organs is a Christian approach to that. But morphological freedom in particular just wants to erase that distinction between repairing something and enhancing something and saying either one, it's up to you. If you want to repair something that's broken in your body, hey, it's your choice. If you want to radically change your body, if you want to add magnets under your skin or RFID chips like the, you know, tap to pay type stuff that we see in commercials, if you want to embed one of those in your skin, hey, go for it. Change yourself.
Talking with Dr. Jacob Schatzer this morning about some of the different movements in our country and some momentum around the idea of changing oneself, becoming more than human, taking advantage of technology to do so. And Jacob, I have to stop for just a minute before we go through some of these steps and ask you the question around putting chips under our skin. I have to say that that calls to mind some of the great warnings of my youth, in which the idea was is that if you put a microchip under your skin and could pay for groceries that way, pretty soon the government could control you. And this is the first step to the mark of the beast. I'm sure some listeners are familiar with that idea, Jacob. Have you heard this kind of reference point before?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know that we necessarily have to connect it there for it to be concerning either way. But yeah, certainly. And there, a lot of the problem is these things sound extreme. But there are people that are doing this already, just self-experimenting, putting those sorts of things under their skin and using them. And really what I want to draw out is it's easy for us to see those things and think, oh, well, obviously I'm not going to slice open my finger and slide a chip in there. But there are choices that we make every day about our interaction with technology that actually aren't that far from the very same values that promote that worldview.
Well, and once we take those steps, Jacob, where we're willing to embrace technology in this way to sort of change the way we function as human beings, there's a few more steps that begin to follow, and we start seeing more and more the difficulty of this subject. So when we come back from break, I want to ask you about the next step in this process that has to do with augmented reality and tying it into things like Google Glass and Pokemon Go and some of the other things that are sort of all the rage in our country right now. So get your perspective on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined by Dr. Jacob Schatzer. We've been talking a bit about the topic of transhumanism this morning, and the context in which we're using that is human beings taking technology and augmenting themselves or enhancing themselves as perhaps the next move in what some people consider to be an evolutionary journey of the human race. And Jacob, we are chatting a bit about once we embrace the possibility of using this technology to augment ourselves, we do head into this next step that you outlined, which is an augmented reality, and how we understand and perceive the world is now being using that word augmented by technological means. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so with augmented reality, we're really getting at the fact that we might like to think that our tools are very separate from us. We can pick them up when we want to use them and put them down when we're no longer interested in them. But in reality, especially with these technological tools, is they're so immersive and they're so tied into the way we exist and the way that we see the world that they really change our experience of reality.
And as we head into that realm, whether it's a Google Glass or Pokemon Go, there's another step that we end up taking where there's a third step in this process that you outline, and that has the idea of not just augmenting our reality, but beginning to somehow put our mind and our memories in a memory bank of sorts. And it's an interesting concept, Jacob. We were watching, as a family, the show Scorpion that I think is on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something now, and it's about these geniuses who are working for the government. And in one of the episodes, one of the geniuses is trying to save his sister's life, who is dying of MS, and his method for doing so is to try to raise enough money so that he can figure out how to upload her consciousness into some sort of technological bank so that, you know, in the future, he can sort of restore her consciousness with a new technology body.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that the way that these are connected is what's interesting, is often Christians hear those kind of scenarios, and we think, well, those are so far off, that's of course just a TV show, but then we turn around and we see ways that we're already able, through Google Glass or through just any smartphone, to experience reality in a different way, to augment and kind of combine the digital with the real. And it's that combining of the digital with the real that begins to filter and change reality for us. It changes what we see. It changes the way we experience God's world. It changes the way we interpret God's world. And as we become more and more comfortable with that kind of existence and an augmented reality, we might be tempted to think, hey, you know, maybe it wouldn't be so bad to just live inside of a computer. So there are these small steps. If you look at the last one, it seems like a big step, but it's these small steps in between that shape us, that disciple us, and I think actually lead us in that direction.
Well, and you point out after this, too, that we're in a realm now where Christians are uncomfortable. And you write, as followers of Jesus, we worship a God who took on flesh, who became a person in order to redeem humanity. And then these words I thought were terribly compelling here, Jacob. You said that salvation for Christians isn't an escape from the biological to the digital, for God has redeemed the biological in Christ. What are some of the impulses, what are some of the motivations in the way you see it that humans are pursuing this kind of escape to the digital as opposed to leaning into Christ for the ultimate redemption of the biological?
Yeah, well, I think that these sneak in really sinister ways. It's really easy for us to think that what the problem really is something biological. The problem that we really need solved is something that technology can solve. And if only we could do that, then everything would be better. I mean, you see this in the way that social media was initially popularized, right? The idea with something like Facebook is, well, what's wrong with your life? What's wrong is that you just can't connect with your friends quite as easily as you would like to. So here, we'll provide you with this platform that enables you to find all of your high school friends and connect with them and talk and that's not really the solution to the loneliness that we feel. Ultimately, we need a relationship with Christ, and we need to be built up in the body of Christ in the local church. And so I just think there are little things like that where the digital provides this glimmer of hope because it somehow ties to something that's a problem, but ultimately it fails to deliver on what we really need. And we see this in various ways. And I think the more and more we move away from local embodied expression of the faith to digital disembodied expression, we're moving in this direction. We're moving away from the communities that God has called us to.
Well, and that does have relevance for what has been a pretty significant movement in many parts of our country in Christianity, and that we do interact with our faith through digital means only, whether it's streaming sermons live in the comfort of our own home, so we think. But there is this increasing lack of human interaction, and without that, we do begin to take on sort of different realities as people if we're not in face-to-face conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And those things aren't necessarily bad. It's not, of course, bad to listen to Christian radio or to listen to sermons online and to help ourselves grow and learn. But the problem is when people think, oh, I don't need to go to a local church anymore. I don't need Christian friends in my area. I can just listen to the best sermons in the world online, and I never need to interact with anyone. That's not what Christianity is. I mean, even Paul, right? Paul used the technology of letters, which we don't tend to think of as a technology if we even write them anymore, but he wrote and sent letters, right? But in his letters, he said, I long to be with you. And so even Paul was using this technology to provide great theology and ministry, but he still wanted to be with people. And I think that it's that sensibility of togetherness that connects with being embodied creatures and Jesus coming in the flesh, not in text message, that's significant for us to remember.
Is there any of this that connects to some of the time of Paul as well, Jacob, in the sense that the city of Corinth was a place when Paul wrote the letters to the city of Corinth and to the Corinthians there, that some of what he was addressing were people that also believed that they could expand beyond the human race? In their case, it wasn't technology. They thought they were sort of becoming androgynous, angelic beings that were too big now for the human race. This seems to be some sort of impulse that isn't just true of today's generation, but human beings seeking to somehow transcend their own humanity.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that's one of the responses to the fall and one of the responses to our sense of limitedness and our sense of alienation and our sense of something is wrong. We look for solutions to that. And any solution that we find outside of Christ is just deceiving ourselves. And so I hope that as Christians try to engage technology and not run from it, but seek to wisely and carefully engage it, we can acknowledge that look, it's coming with a story. It's coming with a promise that only Christ can rightly make. And I need to listen for when that promise is being made by technology. And I need to ready myself to resist that promise and remember that Christ is the only hope that I have.
Mm-hmm. Jacob, we have just about a minute left here. I'd be curious, though, to get your insight and maybe some wisdom into the idea of how do we balance the desire for better life and better quality of life as human beings around the world with the idea that ultimately our lives do fail. We live in a broken and fallen and corrupted world that does need to be redeemed. What's the balance between seeking a better quality of life and recognizing that we are frail and broken all at the same time?
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly difficult balance to find, and I don't know that I have the answer for that. I think that one piece of the answer might be seeking the balance even that we find in Scripture. We often in those times drift towards the passages that just talk about how perfect everything is going to be in the end, and those passages have their place. But we also need the Psalms of lament, and we need to remember that sometimes the right response to the brokenness that we experience is not to figure out how quickly we can fix it, but it's instead to sit in that brokenness and cry out to God and name the brokenness for what it is and to call out to him and remind ourselves that he is our only hope, even as he graciously uses many of these technological advances that we've talked about.
Well, Dr. Chester, I sure appreciate your insight into this topic. It's one that I was not terribly familiar with in terms of the term transhumanism, but it sure seems to be showing up in a variety of ways in popular culture and media. So thanks for giving us some wisdom into this.
Yeah, thank you so much.